I am a ministry leader in Brazil. I struggled a lot leading women in the last 2 years.
This is an email Revive Our Hearts received from a listener.
By October 2017, God brought healing to me through Revive Our Hearts resources. God brought my husband and me to a new church in 2018. And I have prayed that everything I learned from these recent experiences will help me better serve the new group of women in this new church. Pray for me as I connect with this new group and for a humble heart to support women there in God's way, not mine.
Well, thank you, Lord. As our team was preparing Revive Our Hearts programs and resources, we certainly had no way of knowing what this dear sister would be struggling with, but the Lord knew. And I'm grateful and I'm humbled that He would use our efforts to bring healing to this woman's heart and to launch her into a new season of fruitfulness and ministry. And if you have financially supported this ministry in the past, then you're an important part of this woman's story too. Your support provides encouragement to hurting women, and it equips women to minister to those around them. Now, we especially need your support right now. This is the end of our fiscal year when we wrap up our books and start into a new budgeting cycle. To end this fiscal year in a healthy position, we're asking the Lord to provide at least $680,000 in donations this month. Would you be a part of helping to answer that need through your prayers and your financial gift? You can support Revive Our Hearts by calling us at 1-800-569-5959. It's 1-800-569-5959. Or visit us online at reviveourhearts.com. Thanks so much for supporting Revive Our Hearts, as together we're ministering to the spiritual needs of women in Brazil and around the world.
This is the Revive Our Hearts podcast with Nancy DeMoss Wagelmuth, author of Lies Women Believe, for May 10th, 2018. All week, Nancy's been talking with Christy Irwin about the challenges and the joys in foster parenting. Today, we'll hear how Christy copes with the emotional roller coaster of loving children, only to have them go back to their birth parents. Let's return to the conversation.
Well, if you've missed the last couple of days of Revive Our Hearts, you need to go to reviveourhearts.com to the podcast or to the transcript or the audio and pick up this conversation I've been having with Christy Irwin. Christy's a longtime friend, but we haven't seen each other in a number of years, and God's been writing a story in her and through her and her family, her husband Jeff, and their now six children that involves caring for the least of these through foster care, through adoption. It's something we've never addressed before on Revive Our Hearts. I don't know why, but I'm so thrilled we're doing that now. And Christy, thank you for taking time. Well, Robert and I are here in Little Rock today to come into the Family Life studio and talk with our Revive Our Hearts friends.
Oh, I am just beyond humbled and blessed to be on this side of the microphone. It's just a blessing.
A blessing. And you were, I think, at the Governor's Summit this morning talking. What was that?
Our governor, Governor Hutchinson, when he took office a couple of years ago, made it a focus for foster care and improvements in the system and better outcomes for our kids. And so we had a summit 2 years ago, and today we were following up on that. And so we were able to have some of our kids that had been adopted and some that still needed to be adopted to address the audience of faith leaders and business leaders in the community. And so it was just really neat to get to be there and allow folks to hear from them especially.
So what started out for you back in the early 90s as you and Jeff taking in children, usually for short-term interim foster care,
yes,
has grown into something much probably more complex and more compelling and more fruitful than what you might have ever imagined.
It really has. For years, we had been fostering with Bethany Christian Services, an amazing ministry that places newborns for adoption. And other parts of the country, they do foster care as well. But I was beginning to get restless because we weren't being used because we weren't needed, which was a great problem to have.
Because the children were going right from the birth mother
to the adoptive parents.
Which is perfect for them, but it didn't change the call on my heart.
Which was God to foster.
There. Yes. So I began searching. We had a baby that was about 5 months old from Bethany, and he was older than, you know, the newborns that we normally had. And the very first night, we woke up to this horrific noise, and I sprinted out of bed, and I ran over to the crib, and he was banging his head back and forth on the bed. Mm. And I grabbed him up and I put him in my arms and he began banging his head on my chest. And I realized that he was self-soothing. He had been with an 18-year-old birth mother with three children trying to work and go to school and meet the needs of this family. And she couldn't do it. And so she was placing her kids for adoption. What that did for me is it let me see the bigger picture and the greater need. Hmm. Because kids that are abused and neglected and abandoned and all of those kinds of things are not going to end up at the doors of a private Christian adoption agency.
Normally.
Yes. Right. I mean, normally that's true. If people know about it, the state's going to be called because that's the investigation, all of those kinds of things. It's a mandatory
reporting,
thing that has to happen. So that just began stirring around in me. And there were four of us actually who had been fostering. And one by one, they began moving to foster for the state. And so the Lord placed it in our hearts. That's what we knew we needed to do. And Jeff was on board with that. And we began to go through the training and all the background checks and the home studies and everything that you have to do, which in its own way is a frustrating thing for folks. And what?
Because
it's ominous. It's a big process. But what you need to realize is it has to be to protect the children. Mm-hmm. You've got to go through those things because they've got to know who you are so that they can entrust a child into your home.
And was the state welcoming of Christians getting involved in this process?
Yes. I mean, I don't know that they really knew we were Christians at that point. A lot has changed since then, and they are very welcoming now. Mm. We made that move, and I knew that it was going to look very different. I like to say that Bethany was kind of the country club of foster care. They were supportive. They were there. They were nurturing, even when you were a basket case, after 10 days. But I knew the state was going to—we were going to lose our country club membership. It was going to be a very different animal.
How was it different?
It is massive. The need is massive. The caseworkers are overloaded. And in our state, we have seen incredible progress over the years. But when we began 14 years ago, there was a lot of things that needed to be changed.
In the system.
And so I began to pray that Jeff would fall in love with the first little child that came to our home and that he would be able to see that our sacrifice of maybe, of months and maybe even years was what God was calling us to do. And so we took that step, we got open, and one October day, I got a phone call from a caseworker saying, "We've got a little girl. Would you, be willing to take her?" And there was more to the story, and she had some other siblings and that kind of thing. And I said, "Of course." And I ran by the store and bought a stuffed animal and loaded my car seat in, and I ran down to the DHS office and picked up Serenity.
And I was living in Little Rock at the time, recording Reviver Hearts here at the Family Life Studios. And I remember when Serenity came into your life. You showed up with this new baby.
Yes.
She was a brand new baby, but
right.
She was new to you.
Right.
In a baby carrier. And
yes.
You had done this many times before, but this
yes.
was going to be different.
This was going to be different. And we were on the track to reunify her with her birth mom. And we began, obviously, when you're going to foster, you need to be on the team. You need to play by the rules. You need to be the one that is encouraging everybody involved in the case, I feel like. You don't need to be the one criticizing. You don't need to be the one feeling like you know what's best. There is a time to defend the orphan loud and clear, believe me. There is. But there are times when you just need to be the one ministering. And so
the goal was typically
for
the children to be reunified
yes.
with their birth parents?
Yes. And there's a window of time, year to 18 months, that the state has to, if the parent needs to go to drug rehab or if they need to, whatever they need to do.
Get a job.
Housing, those kinds of things. And so we were on that, that track. And it was just really interesting because about 6 months in, and Jeff didn't tell me this till months later. But he was sitting every Saturday morning, he would take Serenity and they would go get a donut or something and they would bring it back to the house and they would sit at the counter on the little stool and eat it. And he said one day he was sitting there and he was talking to her and looking at her and he just felt in his spirit, the Lord just whispered to him, you're going to adopt this child. Now, you have to understand that never, we did have questions sometimes with babies when we were asked, do you feel led to adopt? Do you feel led to adopt? And the Lord never gave us clearance, never said yes. And so that's why we felt like our point, our place was always in the middle.
The foster
care. We were
care.
Going to, yes, the foster care part of it. And so he didn't share that with me. And we went through a traumatic experience with her case, back and forth between reunification, termination, and really a faith test of, are you going to trust me? And I found myself praying all around that issue with Serenity after about 2 years.
I remember you going through some of this, and it was up and down and in and out and disappointment, and then maybe it's going to work, and then it's not, and you couldn't see the outcome at that
Absolutely.
Point.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I it was a very humbling time for me, faith-wise, because I felt like I would say to the Lord, bless Serenity, protect Serenity, take care of Serenity, but I could never say your will be done. Mm-hmm. I could not get that out of my mouth. And so it was determined that she was going to go home. And so
to her birth mother.
And she went home on a weekend trial.
And you knew that this was a difficult situation.
Difficult situation, not a good situation, but that it was going to be the end of my relationship. And so she came back on a Sunday night, and the next morning, on Monday morning, I just said, okay, God, all right, you know, your will be done in the life of my daughter.
Mm.
Your will be done.
And you'd had her for how long at that
point? 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Your will be done. And the next day, there was a change in the case. There was a critical situation that we didn't know anything about, and immediately the goal changed to adoption. And so in February of the next year, we finalized our adoption, and Serenity became our daughter.
How old was she at that point?
She was 5.
So old enough to have some idea of what was going on and to really consider you and Jeff her parents by that point?
Yes, absolutely. And let me tell you, she was precocious. She, oh my goodness, she was nonstop. Her name's Serenity, but she was not serene. She was all over the place. And she used to be, there were four, you know, obviously we had 4 older children. And so it took all of us to keep her out of the street and to keep her, you know, and I will never forget one day she ran out the door and we caught her, and Jeff said, I'm running to Home Depot. We're putting a lock at the top. We're going to get this all set. So he came back, he locked it all up, and we were like, sat down and thought, we have beaten this toddler at her game. And we hear the doorbell ring and we go, and it's her. She had opened up the window that was low to the ground, climbed out and rung the doorbell. So he probably went to pick up some window locks, and we ended that. But it has been amazing to see the walls fall in the life of my daughter and to see God's provision in her. She's on the youth worship team at church, and to watch her. In fact, I was
there. So she's how old now?
She's 14. And just to see her worship and lead worship. And, you know, she was born at 31 weeks. She was born cocaine positive at 31 weeks, 3 pounds, 11 ounces. Very, very difficult situation. And to see her now and to hear her, it's just miraculous. And I think, you know, one of the things that as adoptive parents, we need to understand, and we need to come to the truth, that our children's lives don't begin when their name changes. Her life did not begin the day that I got that phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Her life began at conception. And if we don't, as adoptive parents, value that and value her birth family and where she came from and all of that, then our kids are never going to fully trust us and love us in a way that God designed.
Yeah.
And I learned that with her one night. She is a late night owl, does not like to go to bed. It was about 5 or 6 years ago. She was didn't want to go to bed. And so she was just mad at me and slammed down whatever it was, which is not really typical how she acts, but she did that night. And so all of a sudden, out of the blue, never had said anything like this before or since, she said, I wish I was with my other family.
Wow.
And so I went out into the hallway and I took a breath and I'm like, okay, Lord, this is a turning point. I went back in and I said, sis, I said, you owe me an apology. And she was like, huh? I said, you know what you owe me an apology for? No. You owe me an apology for being disrespectful. But you know what you don't owe me an apology for? No. You don't owe me an apology for saying you wish you were with your other family. Mm-hmm. Because if I were you, I would feel the same way. Because God designed the family to be together. And because of some bad situations, some difficult decisions, that was not an option. And so God decided to give you to us. And it was almost as if the curtain dropped and the walls fell. And she understood, hey, Mom embraces where I came from.
Mm-hmm.
And she loves me and she loves my family. And we make it a point to never talk about, in a negative light, about the birth families of our children that we've adopted.
Does she have memories
she
of
does.
A birth family?
She does. We actually have a relationship with her brothers. Mm-hmm. And so we'll get together with them. And it's amazing the memories that they have. Even the colors of popsicles that they have. I mean, just amazing, which is another critical thing. You know, siblings being together is a critical thing and something that we're fighting for all the time in advocacy with foster care and adoption. But she gets to have that relationship with them. And her memories, I mean, she has more memories than I would think for a 14-month-old coming into, you know. But she's a survivor. That's the other thing. You know, she had to learn to survive. And she's a nurturer. She is a just an incredible nurturer as a result of that.
Do you ever find yourself feeling critical of the situations they come out of, those birth moms, those families that are so troubled?
Yes. I have to stop and remember, you know, that could be any of us. Their lives and their situations have dictated what has happened. And many times it's a cycle. And, you know, I see that with the kids that I work with that are waiting to be adopted, who are going to repeat the cycle unless God intervenes. And so I don't think I can let that be my focus, because some of the things that have happened to kids that I know are so horrific. That it's really hard to just take in and to understand, that I just almost have to leave that in the Lord's hands and just pick it up from there and do what I can do and what He's called me to do to help.
You've written that your calling was not to judge them, but to be Jesus to them.
Absolutely. We had a situation 13 years ago, actually. Got a call late one night about a mama, 12 children, 11 of them were coming into foster care, and the newborn baby was, well, he was 2 months old, was screaming. I heard he was in the investigator's car, and she said, can you take this little guy? I said, absolutely. She said, Mom won't tell me what formula he's on. I said, I've got some here. I'll mix it up, and I'll meet you on the driveway. So I did, and we welcomed this bouncing baby boy. They busted in a drug raid and would not have even known he was there, except one of the other siblings said, hey, we got a brother in the other room. So for 6 months, we had this little guy, and the mom and I would see each other at visits. But because of some volatility in the situation, they didn't want her to know who I was. So they just kind of pretended I was the driver that brought the baby. But when it got towards Christmas time, I was like, no, I've got to. And so I got pictures of him and fixed, you know, did a Christmas gift and everything, and dropped it when I dropped his bag. I mean, they didn't want me talking to her. They didn't want me. Well, the next time I saw her, she threw her arms around me. And she said, you will never know what those pictures mean to me. And she worked her case plan, and within 6 months, she got her kiddos back. And was it a perfect situation? Absolutely not. Was it how I wanted him to grow up? No. But she loved him. And God brought together two mamas with one thing in common. We loved a little boy with all of our hearts. And we're still in contact with her. It's still not a good situation, but God has allowed me to maintain that relationship with her for 13 years. So.
Talk about Baby B.
Oh, yes. You know, moving to the state, there was a lot of crises that we really couldn't have anticipated, and a lot more sacrifice than we ever dreamed we would be involved in. And one day I was actually at my church on a Saturday. Serenity's adoption hadn't been finalized yet. And I'm sitting at a parenting conference, and I looked down at my phone, and it was Serenity's caseworker. She said, hey, call me. Well, I thought, oh no, what has happened? So I jumped up, ran out, and called her. She said, oh, it's not about Serenity, but do you know anybody to take a 5-week-old baby girl? And I was like, no, but let me see if I can make some phone calls. Well, I called several people and nobody could do it. So I snuck back into the conference and I elbowed Jeff in the ribs. And I said, leaned over and said, can we take a baby for the weekend? Well, that was code for they're never leaving, you know, if you say the weekend. And so he's like rolled his eyes because he'd seen that so many times before and said, yeah. So I left the conference, ran home, got my car seat, ran down there and looked into the eyes of this stunningly beautiful baby girl who had been dangled over an overpass in traffic at 5 weeks old.
Wow.
And I took her home and immediately just fell in love with her. And by Sunday night, Jeff said, you want to do this, don't you? And we actually already had another little guy. And so we had a lot going on. I said, I do. So long story short, for the next 16 months, we hung on every word that baby B did. We celebrated her first birthday. We loved her so well. And the goal began to change towards adoption. And we were on board with that. We even had our C name picked out and we were ready to go. And by this time, I had a lot of friends at DHS and everybody, attorneys, everybody I knew said, it's a no-brainer. It's a slam dunk. It's going to happen. So let me preface this by saying when the goal was reunification, we were on board with that. Mm-hmm. But when it began to change, maybe I was a little not on board as much as I should have been. But once that goal changed, we knew that was our daughter. And so we went to court the last time, and there was some unsettling in my spirit about the way that things played out that day, but I just kind of blew it off. And people continued to say, it's a no-brainer, it's going to happen. So the judge said, I'm going to take it under advisement, which
you thought that the child was going to
be mine. Yeah. And she said, I'm going to take it under advisement. And so 5 weeks went by, we hadn't heard anything. It was a Wednesday afternoon at 1 o'clock, and I was loading the girls into the car to take Serenity to the dentist, and I got a phone call from B's attorney. And she said, she was just broken. She said, Christy, I don't know how to say this, but she said, the judge has ruled that she's going to a family member. And I barely made it back to my house with them. And I called Jeff and I called my kids, and a couple of them were on their way. Jeff was on their way. So from 1 o'clock in the afternoon till 5 o'clock that afternoon, I packed her things and wept, literally wept, and held her and wept. And 4 hours after that phone call, the child that I thought I was going to watch grow up and get married and be my daughter left in a car and drove away for me never to see her again.
Into a situation you knew was not going to be
yes.
an ideal one.
Yes. And I stood, it's almost like I can see it in a snapshot. Everybody on the porch, Jeff with his arm around me at the car, her looking up like, Mama, what is happening? And me wailing, just wailing. And I turned around and I went back in my house and I went upstairs and I got in bed and I covered up my head. And I just thought, this is it. I can't do this. I don't want to do this. I think that's the only time over these last 25 years that I have really thought, I don't want to do this. I can't do this. My heart was broken. It was ripped out. I was just devastated. And there was nowhere to go with that. There was nobody to talk to, there was nothing. And honestly, it was probably 6 months of really struggling. And I didn't realize how hard I struggled and how bad it was until one of my friends said, after about 6 or 7 months, she said, I think we finally have our Christy back. And I realized at that point that it had been that bad. And the Lord, he was far from me at that time, not because of him, but because mm-hmm. of me, mm-hmm. because of my pushing. I didn't want it. I didn't want to hear it. Even though I would try, like I put scriptures about hope all over my house, pictures of her, praying she'd come back, praying, you know, all of this. But the reality was I didn't want to hear from him because I felt like he had failed me. Mm. And I felt like he could have intervened and he didn't. I mean, that's just the honest yeah. truth. I couldn't have said that out loud then. I can mm-hmm. say it now mm-hmm. because I'm looking back on it. But after that 6 months, we felt like, I just said to Jeff one day, I think we can do this again. And he's like, okay, I'm following your lead. And so about 2 days later, a friend of mine that was a caseworker said, I need you to take this little guy, will you? And I was like, yeah, we will. Hmm. So I drove downtown Little Rock and picked up this bouncing baby boy who is now my son.
Wow.
And, you know, the Lord has just redeemed that. Baby B was the darkest cloud I could have ever imagined. It really was. And Edward is a silver lining. Mm-hmm. Because Jeff and I were talking about it 2 days ago about the loss, and that it's still, I can see her in the car driving mm-hmm. away, you know, and I have a heart, a little Brighton heart on my keychain that had her picture in it that I have now. And every time it clings up against my dashboard, I think of her, you know, and yet God redeemed that. And one of the things that he's done in redeeming it is allowing that story to be what resonates with foster moms. And as I was writing my book, I was actually finished with it, and it was getting ready to go to the publisher, and that happened. And I told Jeff, I can't write that. And he's like, you have to. You said you wanted to be transparent. You know, what better way? And that has been the one chapter that foster moms particularly have clung to and have emailed me about and Facebook messaged me about and said, it's just nice to know someone gets it. You know, someone understands. And there's the kind of grief that that just encompasses you. And I've had foster moms say, you know, and I want to tell foster moms to give yourself the freedom to grieve in a way that's right for you. If you want to talk about it, talk about it. If you don't want to talk about it, don't. If you need a keychain, I had one mom say that she carried the little girl's pajamas in her purse for 4 months. And just every once in a while, she'd pull those pajamas up and hold them, you know, close to her. Give yourself the freedom and the grace to grieve, but don't get stuck there. Yeah. Because God does not desire for us to be stuck there. Satan does. He would like nothing better than to get you stuck in that discouragement and depression and grief and just faithlessness so that you're rendered impotent to do any more for another child. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful that he didn't let me stay there, that he took a hold of my hand and he pulled me out of the muck and he set me, you know, on higher ground, and I'm forever grateful for that.
Nancy DeMoss Wahlgemuth has been talking with Christy Irwin about responding to God's call to care for the fatherless. If you missed any of this helpful conversation on foster parenting, you can hear it at reviveourhearts.com. That's where you'll find the daily transcript and the audio to stream or download. Again, it's reviveourhearts.com. Tomorrow, Christy Irwin will be back to explain why sometimes foster parenting is a choice for life.
I have a job to do, and I have a responsibility. And there are kids that are counting on me, and they're counting on you, and they're counting on the body of Christ. Their lives, literally and figuratively, their lives depend on what we do and what we say. And if we're not willing to step up, some of them are going to lose their lives.
Please be back for Revive Our Hearts. Revive Our Hearts with Nancy DeMoss Wahlgemuth celebrates life. It's an outreach of Life Action Ministries.